Welcome to the Bridging the Divide podcast. Each week, we'll explore the key factors that have contributed to today's economic divide, hear from experts and changemakers, and offer practical insights for aspiring entrepreneurs who are ready to break down barriers and inspire others. Join me as we navigate the challenges and opportunities for closing the economic gap, one conversation at a time. Hello, and welcome back to the Bridging the Divide podcast. I'm your host, Rolando Bonilla. First of all, this has been great. The questions I keep getting have been amazing. I love that, although a lot of you don't know each other, most of you don't know each other at all, the thinking and the questions seem to have a very similar thematic thread through all of them. And today I want to touch on one of those issues that keeps coming up over and over and over again there. In the issue of how I handle rejection. It's clearly something I've touched upon. If you've heard any of the previous podcasts, I talk about how in order to, you know, do well in business, you have to be comfortable with rejection. There really is no way around that. Rejection is the name of the game. Today, though, I'm going to try to explore a little bit more of kind of the things that I do and have had to remind myself in my own evolution on this topic. Yes, undoubtedly. If any of you can remember your days in junior high, high school, and even later on in life, you know, asking someone out, your nerves, you get jittery, you're a little sweaty, you're wondering how that person's going to react. You're doing everything you can to create that perfect setting to finally ask that person for lunch, dinner, or whatever, right? All of those feelings and even physiological responses, like the sweating and the nervous tics that I'm describing, that a lot of us in some way can remember, come from the fear of rejection. It is almost it's up there with public speaking, right? In public speaking, the fear of public speaking is also very rooted in rejection. What if people don't like what I have to say? So for me personally, the way I've kind of evolved in the rejection space was this understanding in the very beginning. I was that kid, right? I was that person who would get nervous, would get a little stressed out, would want to better understand what I had to do to make this a perfect set of facts so that I'm not in a position where I got rejected. However, the way I grew up, whether I knew it or not, rejection was a big part of my life, right? Come from a working poor family. We had what we needed to have, but things weren't easy either. So when you have that, if you really think about it, there were the times, I mean, many of you can remember going to an amusement park and asking your parents for a souvenir. And the response that I would get, not always, but more often, was no, a rejection. And it would hurt my feelings, and I would be in my feelings, and I'd be devastated. Although I was the oldest, I would also know not to really dwell in that for too long because I didn't want to put that pressure on my parents, or that feeling of guilt in my parents. Even as a boy, I knew I had that kind of influence, and I didn't want to do that. And as I evolved, rejection, like everyone, was something I didn't necessarily know how to process and deal with. But as I got older, and I would say maybe by the time I got to around high school, and yes, in high school, you get rejected a lot. You get rejected asking someone out. You get rejected applying for colleges. You get rejected trying out for sports teams, clubs. Rejection, again, whether you know it or not, is a big part of your life. So what ended up working for me and has really become the core mantra is that I recognize that the rejection is very often, or in most instances, it's not about me. I may not be a good fit for a team. Or candidly, they just have better players in that position on that team. If I ask someone out and they said no, it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with me. There are folks out there who think that, but it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with me. It just means I am not a good fit for that person. I may not be what they like. That may not be what they were into. Heck, I may not even be where their mind is at that time. the same applies in business, right? Like, you have to accept the fact that just because you're asking someone and they say no, doesn't mean you have a bad service, bad product. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It could simply mean they don't have the budget for you. The person you're pitching doesn't have the necessary approvals to get you approved. For example, let's assume you are, I don't know, a law firm, and it's a one woman, one man shop, and you're asking someone at a Fortune 500 company to give your law firm of one a chance. That person doesn't know you. So you're asking that person to take a level of risk that maybe they don't want to take, when maybe they've got access to the Kravitz and the Pillsbury Winthrops and, you know, all these other law firms that have been around for a really long time. Does that rejection mean that you are a horrible lawyer and you have a bad law firm concept? Not at all. It just means that you're talking to someone who you're asking to take a very massive risk that, if things don't work out in terms of this relationship with you, can have severe implications for that person's career. So in those instances, it's not about you. It's about them preserving their position. And since they don't know you and you're not a known entity, they're going to go with what they know because that's what they know. And that's more than likely not going to put them in a bad position if things go wrong, because those relationships have been longstanding in there before that person was in that role. The same with asking for capital, right? If you're asking for capital, sometimes someone will say no. Actually, a lot of times people will say no. And if you take it personally and shut down after that, you know, interview, you're not asking the right questions of yourself, and at times even the person in front of you. Maybe where you are in your company formation is too early for them. Maybe your company is something that can't get scaled, or scaled fast enough that they can get their money back at the time frame that they're looking for, that they would consider optimal. Maybe they just don't understand your product, or maybe they have had interactions with something similar to your product and they've decided they no longer want to be in that space. Again, has nothing to do with you. So for me, there's always been this realization. I'll give you a great example. I mean, I lost an election in 2022. Do I think I was the best candidate? Well, absolutely. I think I had a resume that spoke for itself. But that wasn't where the electorate went. Am I going to sit there and question every life decision I made? And I bring that up because it's a very public rejection, right? Do I sit there and wonder whether I'm, you know, worthy of successes in the future? No, it wasn't about me. It was another flavor that they preferred that made more sense to them, and they supported. That doesn't mean the other party, it was any less. It just means that they were, according to the electorate, a more natural fit. And I think when you look at the world that way, it alleviates a lot of the self-talking, the self-doubt, the pressure that we tend to create on ourselves. Very often, we think that it's about us, and the reality of it is it's not. I mean, I've seen the diatribes on social media. I want to explain to all of you where I stand. Who cares? Like, why do you even think people care, right? It's not about you. And I think so long as you remember it's not about you, rejection becomes an easier thing to manage, because it becomes an opportunity for you to get data points. I saw a speech this morning from one of my favorite all-time Formula One racers, Niki Lauda. If you remember the movie Rush, he was the other side of that story. And he talked about, he was receiving this big prestigious award, and he says, "I'd like to dedicate this award to the losers." And there was this kind of quiet in the arena ballroom where he was receiving this award. He says, "Because I as well know from experience that in losing, we get better. We get stronger. We learn more from losing." He specifically said, "We learn more when we lose." And I think that's the thing about rejection. If you close yourself off, shut down emotionally, take it personally, you miss the opportunity to really gather the information that you need to make an assessment as to how to make your product better or where to take your product to ensure that you get what, you know, you get the response that you're looking for. So for example, I'll go back to law because I think it's pretty clear. If you are, you know, for example, hanging out with bankers and your product, your law, for example, is, I don't know, just, you know, bear with me here, immigration law. The likelihood of your product being the product they're thinking about is pretty minimal. They're probably thinking about mergers and acquisitions. They're probably thinking about securities law. They're probably thinking about real estate. They're thinking about, you know, changes to the securities code. They're thinking about things that, yeah, there's probably a little bit of immigration in there, you know, particularly when you're talking about engineers, but that's not necessarily what they're leading with. On the other hand, if you walked into that same crowd and you said, hey, I'm doing, you know, securities law, I'm doing, you know, mergers and acquisitions, you're probably going to get a better response because you're in tune with your audience. So know your audience, know who you're talking to, understand where they're at. Don't look at the world through your perception. Look at it through the reality that you're in front of. That way, you're in a much better position to minimize the level of rejection that you're going to get. And now rejection all of a sudden goes from being this thing that hurts your feelings to really being, at least to me, a game, right? It's a game that allows me the opportunity to get better. Now, obviously, I don't want to get rejected. But I also know if there's a higher likelihood that if I'm getting rejected more consistently, it's not because of them not liking me as much as it's about me not reading the room and trying to have a conversation about something that candidly, in some instances, they just don't have any desire to talk about. It's not what they do. It's not their wheelhouse. It's not where they're at mentally. So that way I'm in a better position to make that adjustment, right? I, you know, have some mentees in the business space, and it's funny, it's the ones that tend to listen and understand this concept, I've noticed, tend to get clients or an increase in services at a very faster rate than those that keep kind of holding on to, I can't believe they said no, you know, I don't think they understood me. Yeah, that part's probably right. I don't think there was an understanding, but that's not on them. That's on you as the person coming into the room trying to influence a conversation, a decision, and conveying a message, right? That's going to always come down to you to understand that. Because if you do take the time to show the person in front of you the respect of understanding where they're at, you aren't just showing them respect from a very practical standpoint. You're also showing yourself respect because you're not wasting your time, right? You're not wasting your time talking to everyone under the sun. If I'm selling San Francisco Giants hats, I'm probably not going to sell too many if I go to LA at Dodger Stadium, right? That's not the team. That's not who they're looking for. That's not who they're rooting for. So if I go to LA selling San Francisco Giants gear at Dodger Stadium, and then I come back upset that no one bought my product, is that the fault of the people at Dodger Stadium? Or is that my fault for not understanding my audience? On the other hand, if I'm selling, you know, San Francisco Giant gear right outside of Peck Bell Park, I think it's still called that, then yeah, I'm going to probably have a higher likelihood of success. It's the exact same concept, right? So I break it down to that granular level because sometimes, you know, new business owners tend to really kind of stew in their thoughts and overthink this and try to overcomplicate this. I told you, I got some mentees that insist on talking to me and in business acronyms to justify things. It's really not that complicated. It really isn't. If you understand who you're talking to and you take the time to respect them to understand their world much more clearly, you're going to put yourself on a path where not only are they going to appreciate the conversation and value it, they're also more than likely to want to work with you because you understand them. You understand their world. You understand where they're coming from. But if you don't do that, I remember when I first started, I've been doing business pretty much my entire life, but much more formally, maybe as a company about 15 years ago, I would come into a meeting and I would tell you every single thing I can do for you. I would say if we had a 30-minute meeting, the first 20 to 25 minutes of that meeting were me sitting there telling you every single thing I can do for you. I didn't really, you know, do the research that I needed to do to really understand the person in front of me. I didn't walk in there with a set of questions from me to them. I walked in there with a spiel that I was convinced was the one. It wasn't. I had to teach myself. And the reason I knew it wasn't was I wasn't getting the results that I was looking for. And I had to sit down and be honest with myself and ask myself, why am I being rejected at these higher levels, these higher rates? And the answer was simple. I didn't know what they wanted. I didn't take the time to ask them what they wanted. I didn't give them the space to even thought partner with me and have a conversation that may ultimately lead them to what they wanted. I came in like a bull in a china store saying, we could do this, we could do this, we could do this, we could do this. That's great. But if all of the things I'm offering aren't in any way helping them solve a problem, then I can talk until I'm blue in the face and it's just not going to be the right fit. And they're going to reject. But was it really a rejection? Or was it me not doing the homework, the preparation required to really understand who it was that I was talking to? Again, although rejected, it wasn't about me. It was about the fact that I did not understand what they needed. It was about them. So if you understand that it's about them, and you take the time to do your homework, you take the time to do the research, you take the time to develop some thoughtful questions that shows a level of intellectual curiosity, but also shows that you are actually understanding the subject matter, then your ability to get rejected is going to be minimal. I mean, it's the reason, you know, a lot of these social media platforms are collecting our data. They want to understand what we like. You ever notice that sometimes you say something and 2 seconds later an ad pops up about the thing you're talking about? That's because these companies and their algorithms have to understand the concept of getting to you by talking to you about what's important to you. I recently bought a soccer jersey, a big soccer fan, love the jerseys. And from that point forward to now, I have received multiple ads on my phone about soccer jerseys. And I'll tell you, it works. Because I have not rejected some of them. I've actually purchased more soccer jerseys. Same concept. Always about understanding the person on the other side. Understanding where they're coming from. And on your side, it's about not taking it personally. Yes, in the beginning, as you're trying to kind of find that niche, very often you're going to find more rejection than embracing of what you do. But over time, as you start developing that niche and you start developing and understanding it, your rejection levels should drop dramatically because now you're getting a feel and a flow for who it is that really wants to work with you, sees value in you. You know, I've been in situations where even when it looked like there was a fit, once in the relationship, you could quickly determine that there wasn't a fit. That's okay. Right? Yes, it's a form of rejection. But very often what I have found is that had I paid attention to the cues leading to that, I would have seen right out of the gate that we weren't a good fit. So instead, I made that decision sometimes collectively after the fact, when you realize we're just not on the same page. You're talking about Venus. I'm talking about Mars. And no matter what I do, no matter what they do, and ultimately it's about them, right? They're also the customer. It's just not going to click. So rejection is not about you. Rejection is about them, the people you're talking to. The more you do your homework, the more likelihood you're going to have of success because it shows that you're understanding who you're connecting with. If you try to get outside of that and feel you have a shotgun approach, that's fine. You may get a hit, you know, here and there, but you're not going to have the consistency you need to build something out. Look at the companies like Nike. Nike is clearly geared towards athletes or folks who want to feel like athletes when they work out. You look at companies, for example, like, Betty Crocker, right? To this day, you're leaning towards people who enjoy baking, who enjoy you know, baked goods who enjoy that, right? And even their commercials and their marketing are aimed to that particular demographic. If you want to buy a Ferrari, what are they selling? They're selling an experience. They're selling speed. They're selling beyond the fact that it's a beautiful machine. You know, they're not trying to sell you a Ferrari if you have, like, you know, four kids and you're dropping off kids to and from school and soccer camp, right? You're not their audience. You ever notice that you're not going to find an ad for Rolex, for example, inside of Sports Illustrated, but you will find an ad for Rolex if you're reading the Financial Times, if you're reading the Harvard Business Review. You're going to find an ad for Rolex if you're, for example, at the Concours d'Elegance, the big annual car show in Monterey. You're going to see ads for Rolex at Roland Garros, the big tennis tournaments, because that's the audience they're going for. That's who they're going. They understand who their customer is. But now imagine ads for Rolex at the complete opposite, right? I'll go back to Sports Illustrated. I remember when I'd get my copy of Sports Illustrated, I would sit there, and that's not to say that people can't buy it, but they understand that it's a different crowd that's going to that magazine for a different reason. They tend to put themselves in positions of, you know, lifestyle, luxury, aspirational. That's where they are. That's the way you have to view yourself. What is it that you're trying to convey? Who is it that you're trying to interact with? And once you do that, understand them, talk to them, and when you do that, you'll realize that your rate of rejection will drop, because you're being much more thoughtful about it, more intentional about it. And then at that point, yes, you'll have the natural rejection, but your win rate will go a lot higher. And again, I'll leave you with this: don't take it so personally. It's not about you. It's never been about you. I have to remind myself of that all the time. I go back to the, you know, social media posts I see from time to time. You know, I have something I need to tell all of you. Yeah, no one cares. I don't, right? No one cares. You know, I remember when I was the chairman of the San Jose Planning Commission. Those of you that don't know out there that are listening, planning commissions oversee the approval of major projects, your downtown skylines. I mean, it's an important post. And it's more important in the largest city in the Bay Area, the capital of the Silicon Valley. So it was a big responsibility. And the funniest thing is I would sometimes even have to remind my colleagues sometimes, but let's not get so caught up in, you know, wanting to give perfect speeches and wanting to give speeches in the first place sometimes. Because for as much as we think people are sitting at home, you know, watching and listening, they're not. They don't care, right? I mean, the people that care were the people that came before us that were seeking an approval, the people that or rejection, the people that cared were the community members who felt they were being impacted by a potential project or by a potential project not happening. That those bubbles cared. And when all of a sudden you realize that, the ability for me to make decisions was a lot easier because I recognized that what I was doing was important here and only here. And that once I stepped down from that dais, life went on. Whatever decisions I made, and that was that, right? And I think so long as I bring that up because for as important as we thought we were, at least, you know, I always knew that the world's not about me, right? The world's not about the decisions that I make. Only people that cared were those that were impacted. And so long as you kind of remember that, don't take your craft seriously, but don't take yourself so seriously that you feel you need to, you know, defend yourself every 10 seconds if someone rejects you or take it a step further and just shut down, upset because, you know, you got rejected. No, don't do that. Learn, collect that data, make it about them, because ultimately you're selling these products and services to and experiences to them, your potential customers. And then once you recognize that, I can guarantee you, actually, that you're going to have a lot of success with your business. So as always, my friends, thank you for listening. Thank you for making this such a great first season of this show. What was once just an idea and really a response to a lot of the questions I tend to get on a weekly basis has turned into a really enjoyable labor of love that continues getting positive feedback and even some feedback about how I can make things better, which I always appreciate. So with that, I'm going to conclude season one. We're going to take a week off next week to give us time to begin the process of getting you some guests that will give you some perspective in terms of how they were able to close the economic gap for themselves and for their families, and in the process have helped those around them close the economic gap. So with that, as always, thank you for listening. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thanks for listening to the Bridging the Divide podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review, share with a friend, and give us a follow on all of our platforms. Special thanks to you for taking the time to listen today.